As parents of autistic children and as autistic individuals ourselves, we're often faced with additional stressors, challenges, and overwhelming circumstances while lacking support and resources to navigate them. Today, we will discuss the importance of empathy in action and what it means to be an autism ally. This episode aims to provide those outside of the autism community an inside glimpse and how-to guide on what you can do to make it easier on autistic individuals and their parents this Autism Acceptance Month, and of course, year-round.
Welcome to Embracing Autism, a podcast for parents of autistic children seeking advice and support while spreading awareness and acceptance of autism spectrum disorder. I'm Leah.
And I'm Matt.
And each week we will discuss our journey with autism and talk about how to embrace your child's individuality while providing guidance, tips, resources, and sharing our personal stories. This is
Embracing Autism.
So I wanted to jump in and talk about allyship. And that word really means different things to different people. So I just wanted to give a disclaimer at the very beginning of the episode and say, this is kind of like our view and our perception of how we perceive autism allyship, what's helpful and beneficial to us, and perhaps like myself as an autistic individual. But this could be very individualized. So not every family would benefit from the same thing. Not every individual would benefit from the same thing. So it's always best to just ask them directly.
Well, I was going to say, and even your perspective might be different from mine, because like as far as being autistic, you might have a better insight to what type of support and like assistance would be better for you on just like the day-to-day versus like what I would, I believe.
Yeah. So I want to start off talking from the parent perspective, mostly because that is our target audience. You guys are mostly parents out there listening. And this episode's really intended to be shared with maybe your friends or family who might not be heavily involved in the autism community and might not be aware of what it is that you need as a parent. This is meant to be for them to listen to mostly. But one of the things that really right off the bat I kind of want to talk about is the additional stress that a lot of parents have to deal with when it comes to raising a child with a disability such as autism. And that's not to disparage the autistic child at all, but it's just the reality that when you are overwhelmed with doctor's appointments, handling the diet, because that alone can be difficult, meltdowns, school schedules, therapy schedules, all these things, it does get overwhelming after a while. And not a lot of people who would consider themselves allies really understand the day-to-day difficulty that that entails.
From an outside glimpse, so as like someone who doesn't kind of see the day-to-day lifestyle that we kind of go through, it kind of seems like sometimes we get the perspective where it's like, it's a parenting challenge. Like we don't know enough, like as parents, of how to like work with our kids. So as like for you mentioned, as far as like the feeding and like the strict diet, it seems like someone who isn't in this world, they're kind of like, well, that's because like you give your kids too much freedom and they only pick what they want to eat versus like kind of having like a wider variety of diet. The hard thing or the painful thing is like trying to like reinforce like, well, no, these are like restrictive foods. It's not like something we haven't tried. I mean, we've tried introducing new foods constantly and have our own style of how we introduce it, but it seems almost like it's a like parenting perception, like, oh, you're just new at parenting, you'll figure it out kind of thing, versus like additional like complications with like food diets, for example.
One of the things that a good ally could do is really something that they shouldn't do. One of those things is unsolicited advice. When it comes to autism, you get a lot of advice all the time. And it's always things that you've either already tried because you've been in this journey for so many years now, or you are working with therapists who are telling you exactly what you should and shouldn't be doing. Or it's something that you know you've tried, has failed, and you know does not work for your child. I just feel like parents are the experts when it comes to what works for their child and what doesn't. And so one of the things that you as an ally should not do is try to continuously give advice on, oh, well, if you just fed your kid this way, they would eat. Or if you just did X, Y, and Z, they would behave. Those are the types of things that parents of autistic kids do not want to hear, because it is not the same raising an autistic child as it is a neurotypical child. The rules aren't the same. The reactions from the children aren't the same. It really is just not compatible.
How many times have we heard the phrase, oh, if you make something and they don't like it, they can just go without kind of thing. Like, it'll basically like trick them into like eating like what is like prepared for them. Not even as far as like specialized diet, just like a, you make something, if they don't eat it, then, oh, then that's that kind of thing.
And I haven't heard anyone really telling me like, oh, they'll just go hungry. What I've heard and been told constantly is if they're hungry, they will eat it.
Well, yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what really bothers me because I'm right. Like, no, it won't. And I'm like, as an autistic adult myself with a lot of eating aversions, sensory aversions when it comes to the textures of foods, I personally can tell you from my own experience, I will not eat. It's not that I don't like the food, but it's like if I don't feel like the food is compatible to my taste buds and my sensory stuff, there's no way I'm going to eat it. And I've gone days without eating because I couldn't find something that I could tolerate at that time. Matt, you're looking at me because you know that this causes our divorce arguments all the time.
I'm thinking about like the texture where it's like, you're like, oh, it could be super delicious, like the most delicious thing in the world. But if the texture is wrong, then I can't touch it.
It's true.
But like sometimes like, I'm thinking of like, if there's like a puree of something that's amazing, like you just ignore whatever it looks like and it tastes fantastic. And you're like, oh my gosh.
But it's not what it looks like. It's what it feels like in your mouth.
Okay.
Yeah.
I suppose.
You can't get like, away from that. You cannot
put it on like a,
psych yourself out.
Put it on like a chip or something. And then like, it's like.
Well, that's why I can do dips. I can do dips solely because there's like a crunchy chip that goes with it to break it up. Yeah. So it does depend. And that is not something that's like imagined. So when it comes to unsolicited advice, that is my number one pet peeve as a parent and my number one recommendation to those who want to consider yourself allies to the community, allies to parents who are struggling to raise their kids. Please do not recommend that they do these alternative types of, I don't even know what you would call it, behavioral regulation. I don't know what you would call it, but just trust that the parent has tried those things. Trust that the parent knows what's best.
Yeah, I agree. Cause that's my biggest pet peeve where it's almost like, oh, you don't really know what you're doing as a parent. Therefore you're having all these issues. And it's like, well, or there could be something else at play that you yourself are not aware of that's factored in. So yeah, no, that's one of my biggest ones where it's kind of like nails on a chalkboard where I just kind of stand there and like smile and I'm like, okay, like, let's just keep pushing through.
Yes. So autism is not a result of bad parenting. So you can't parent your way out of it, essentially. You can't good parent your way out of meltdowns, sensory overwhelm, those sort of things. So that's not going to be a solution. So that is, again, my number one advice. The other one that I have is, what are some things that you can do? That's something not to do, but what are some things that you can do? Again, just speaking from personal experience, a lot of times parents who are struggling to raise either one or multiple autistic children, like in our case, we don't really have a lot of time for self-care. We don't really have a lot of time to even maintain things in a way that we would like. So for example, we might not be able to maintain the cleanliness of our home because we don't have time to keep up with everything because we're too busy bringing our kids to all the therapies. Maybe we don't have enough time to cook meals every day because it's too challenging having two different kids that have two different dietary needs. And it's just a struggle. So those two areas right there are something that I personally would love support with. So if somebody who is my parent or cousin or neighbor was like, hey, I know that you guys are struggling with caregiver burnout. How can I help this month? One of the things would be doing like a meal train or something for a parent. I can tell you right now, the meal train is not really going to be for the kids because, as I said, sensory issues, you know, the diet issue, don't even bother with trying to prepare food for the child, but at least lift the burden off of the parents and be able to offer maybe a food train for the parents. That way they at least get that off their plate, no pun intended, for like, I don't know, a couple of days, a week or something. Just get your neighborhood friends together and everybody just provide dinner that week. That, for me, would relieve so much stress alone.
Yeah, definitely the meal train is, I mean, a kind of a cool idea. Just the meal train for the parents would be phenomenal, mostly because, like, I mean, we're so focused on trying to get our kids to eat. When after they eat and they go to bed and everything, then it's just kind of like, okay, like, what can we possibly make or grab or do whatever for ourselves? So it's always like, we're not really thinking about ourselves until, like, after, like, the kids are, like, well taken care of. And then by that point, it's just kind of like a scramble trying to keep ourselves going. Because I know whenever we have family and they like offer to like just cook for us, that makes a huge deal, keeping us going and like definitely saves us a little bit. So, I mean, it's, I think, definitely a bonus if you're able to get some type of assistance there.
Yeah. And honestly, with my own like food aversions, I am still more likely to eat something that somebody has donated basically out of love, just out of guilt. So like, that's not going to be a problem with me. For us personally, that's not just like a time saver, but like Matt mentioned, because we are so focused on our kids, oftentimes we as parents leave ourselves as last. Our kids, we're making sure that they're fed dinner at like 5:30, but we don't get to even start our dinner until like 8 p.m. And we don't do it at the same time because, again, our kids don't eat the same thing. We can't eat the same thing. So it's just such a struggle. So that's something that would save us not just time, but would allow us to just get a restful evening, because then we don't have to spend our evening at 8 p.m. just starting to cook something.
But you did give me a great idea, and I'll have to try and incorporate it. So the idea, like, if someone gives you food, you feel obligated and guilt to actually eat the food.
Are you going
to
trick me?
I'm trying to think of like, okay, how can I make dinner, but somehow guilt you enough that you feel bad to turn down the food?
I do that anyway, every time you make meat, because you're meat obsessed. And I'm like, oh, I guess we're having meat again. Well,
because it's the easiest thing to make, though. Like, you basically just pick whatever meat it is, season it, and add heat. Like, that's why guys do it. It's easy to do.
Oh, my gosh. You're meat obsessed. Every meal is basically a slab of meat, and I am not about meat. I mean, I'll eat meat, but that's just too much for me. So meal trains is definitely where it's at, in my opinion. But in addition to that, you can also offer to maybe pay for like a cleaning service one day. And it doesn't have to be like any sort of like daily thing or anything like that. You could just hire somebody for 2 hours to come in to their home and just help them do some laundry, fold it, do some dusting, wipe down counters, whatever it might be. Of course, if I was the parent, I would want to know this well in advance, because if somebody's going to come and stay at my house for a couple hours, I want to make sure that my house is in order and my kids are in order to my liking before a stranger comes in. And also keep in mind that the kids might not be okay with strangers, so you might have to schedule that so that the parents can like take the kids elsewhere while it's happening, etc. But still, cleaning is something that I think would be really beneficial.
So you want to do like a pre-cleaning before the regular cleaning takes place?
Well, kind
I mean,
of.
I get like, it,
you know,
but
like if the kids leave their like underwear on the floor, or like, you know, like right. Crazy things like that, then I'm just like, I don't want strangers to see this.
I mean, that makes sense.
Yes, a pre-clean clean. I'm sure everyone out there listening knows what that is. Every woman knows what that is. But yeah, I think that for us personally, and probably many other parents out there, we would definitely benefit from some sort of like gifted cleaning for a couple hours or something like that. Because again, as a parent to autistic kids, this is just something that falls to the side because you just do not have time. You're lucky if you have time to sleep.
Right. And I think for me, one thing that I notice as far as like a helpful, I don't know, tool, resource, whatever, from like someone from like the outside, not necessarily in the autistic community, is basically just like socialization, just having a conversation just about anything, life. Because I realize that because we are with our kids, running them to therapies and like school and like all the extracurriculars and things, we don't really get much like adult time, and also like work, because we both work full time. So can't get away from that. But I realize like just even just having like a conversation with someone just about like, oh, like how's life, and just talking about just anything, it is like kind of like a like reset where you're kind of like, oh, okay, this was like pleasant, like actually having like a small social life. And I mean, we kind of get that a little bit when we have family or someone who's able to kind of like watch our kids for a little bit, and we're able to do like a like date night with friends or something, so we can kind of like go out and actually kind of like socialize. So for me, I find that that is kind of like a helpful thing to advocate for the community, if that makes sense.
It would be a helpful thing to do.
Yes, exactly. I think people like go on like the same like routine and like keep pushing and trying and trying. But then something as simple as just like having a conversation with like a friend, or like you call or text or have a quick little back and forth, it kind of like recharges you a little bit. And then you can kind of like keep going doing life.
No, I actually think that one's a really important one, because one of the things that happens with parenting autistic kids, or even if you yourself are an autistic individual, is that by default, you kind of start getting cut out of social circles. And for the autistic person, that's usually because of the struggles with the socialization. So like for me, it's just part of having a difficult time navigating social relationships. But for parents of autistic kids, it's usually because you're so busy just navigating the day-to-day when it comes to parenting an autistic child that you don't really have time to really nurture friendships and relationships. But that doesn't mean you don't crave them. That doesn't mean you don't need them. And that certainly doesn't mean that you're not feeling lonely or isolated. So I think a good thing to do would be, as an ally, to check in on these parents or check in on these autistic individuals. Send a quick text message and be like, hey, I was thinking about you. How are things going? Or just checking in and being like, hey, just wanted to see if you heard about this movie that you may think that they might be into. And even if they can't see it, maybe just chat, be like, oh, have you seen the trailer? Just small talk, you know, but stuff that you think might help them get out of the funk of feeling lonely and isolated.
And the word I couldn't remember before was ally. Thank you for using
it's
that.
It's in the name of the episode.
I know, but I was thinking of advocate, but ally, that's what we're looking for.
Yeah, but definitely finding ways to like connect with that person and let them know that like, even if you're not able to hang out and get coffee, even if you're not able to have like full-blown conversations on the phone or whatever it may be, that you're still kind of thinking about them. Because a lot of times what happens is people kind of cut you out. That's something that I don't really like that society does. And maybe this is my autistic brain, but I feel like just because you can't hang out with somebody, it shouldn't determine whether or not you stay friends or stay friendly with that person. And I realize that this is something that's very common with neurotypicals, but I just feel like that's something that could at least be worked on a little bit in terms of trying to be an ally to these parents and individuals who are already feeling a lot of like the social isolation and even like the social stigma that comes with all of this.
I think it's hard. I mean, just in general, because you do have to maintain those friendships. I think, I don't know what you would call it, the high school theory, like after you like get out of high school, like the, oh, we'll be friends forever kind of thing. It's like 90% of those like gone within like the year or something. So like, unless you're like constantly like trying to nurture some of these like friendships, a lot of people just kind of fade out. Like you might have like a like small group that you can kind of check in every once in a while. But like, yeah, sometimes it gets hard because there's so many other things to keep track of or keep up on that sometimes the last thing you're really thinking about is like, oh, I need a social life, because there's so many other things that are more important at the time to address than like, oh, I forgot to check in with Jenny and make sure she's still on the block.
Oh my gosh, really?
I couldn't think of any names, so we're good.
So that's one that comes to mind. Another one that I think is kind of important and probably the most challenging one, at least for us and probably for many people to be able to follow through with, is perhaps offering to babysit. And I know that that one is a big challenge, because if you're not familiar with autism, you might not feel comfortable babysitting their child. Or if you're an autistic individual, instead of offering to babysit, obviously it's not relevant in that case, but maybe offering to hang out. And that might not be hanging out outside of their home. Maybe they're not comfortable with that. Maybe that means hanging in and just like sitting down on the couch and talking about video games or whatever it may be. But trying to give people a break, a mental break, is really important. And I know that with parenting autistic kids, it's really a nightmare trying to find somebody who is willing and capable of babysitting our kids. So that to me is a really big one. And it's kind of like a two-parter, because in order to really do that effectively, you really have to volunteer some time in advance to kind of get to know the child and have the child get comfortable with you before you just dive in and take over, because they might not be okay with it. So that's a little bit of a harder one. But because it's harder, it's also, I think, more valuable.
Yeah, I definitely think that this is, I mean, probably one of the hardest ones that we've come into. I was going to say outside of family, essentially, and then like the once a month respite night, but that's like a whole like organization. Outside of that, I don't think we've ever had anyone who's non-family babysit our kids because they're not aware of some of the challenges that they would have to contend with. And it's, I mean, it's not saying like we don't hang out with good people or anything. It's just, we're not sure how well they would be able to manage like the, like, I mean, our girls are very much polar opposites and they constantly like butt heads. So, I mean, I definitely think that whoever would be babysitting would definitely have their work cut out a little bit.
Yeah. And that's all going to just totally get worse once this baby's here. Cause now it's like two autistic kids and a newborn. Yeah, that's going to happen.
At the same time, it's a little bit like funny because like both of our kids are like very, very affectionate. They'll like both like cuddle us like at the same time. But then like, because they're both cuddling us, if they bump into the other one, it's like World War III.
It turns into World War III. Yeah.
Yeah. And you're like, you're both so cuddly. And like, why can't we like be like all cuddly?
But some of that is just like normal kid behavior. Yeah, for their age, but yeah, it's just like, it's how you diffuse it is not typical. The little arguments they get into is neurotypical,
right?
But how you have to deal with them to get them off that ledge is not. And so whoever's taking care of our children has to be very comfortable with all of these things. So finding somebody who would be willing to go through the work that it will take to understand our kids better and figure out what are they going to eat while we're gone? How are we going to handle if there's a meltdown, elopement risk, all these things so that we could feel comfortable to like trust you enough to be able to do it. That's a longer process. But again, I feel like that is one of the best things an ally could do if you really want to help a parent is put that effort in and really show them. Like, that's how you would really show them that you truly care about them and you're truly invested in helping them by saying, hey, I am willing to put in the work that it takes to kind of learn all that I need to do in order to be able to give you guys like a date night a month or something like that. That would be incredible.
Right. And I think you're absolutely right, because it is probably like the hardest one to both like find and like someone to be equally invested to like kind of like step it up. Essentially, it is arguably like the most valuable one, because like, I mean, that allows you to get other things done, do date night, whatever, but it frees up time and allows you to do other activities and such. I agree. In the hierarchy, I think that's the most valuable one, but definitely a challenging one nonetheless.
Yeah, I personally am going to be leaning towards trying to find that one now that we have our other newest addition coming soon. I wanted to give you guys a reminder one more time, because pretty sure this might be the last reminder that we are due any day now. Basically, baby will be here. We don't really know how that's going to impact the podcast directly, exactly how. We're going to miss probably a couple episodes. We're going to try not to, but it's probably going to happen. So just be prepared for that. And for our US-based listeners, in the meantime, don't forget to enter for your chance to win the green Wonderful Wagon VW4. We have it sponsored by DME Provider Babies on Broadway. Each $1 donation to our Give, Send, Go would get you one entry into the drawing. And the drawing is going to take place after we've reached our goal of raising $2,000, which will go towards our grants and gifting programs at Autism Wish. Also, everyone who enters will also automatically get 15% off of our merch shop. That's my thoughts on the subject. I was just wondering, with you guys out there listening, what are your thoughts? What would you, as a parent or an autistic individual, value as an act of allyship? What support do you wish that others would provide? Or do you prefer to just have your own independence? Maybe you were totally off base and you're just like, all I want from an ally is to be left alone. Don't talk to me all of Autism Acceptance Month. Just go away. Let us know what you think by sharing your thoughts in the comments on YouTube or Facebook at Autism Wish, or continue the conversation with us in our private Embracing Autism community. Become a member today at autismwish.org. You'll get exclusive access to that community where you can help support our mission while also connecting with like-minded parents. Thanks for listening, everybody.
We'll see you next time, right? Whenever that next time.
Whatever that next time is, we don't really know. Hopefully sooner rather than later, but we'll keep you posted. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Autism Wish for updates. We will probably post pictures of baby when she arrives.
Yes.
Bye.
All right. Bye.
This has been the audio from the Embracing Autism Podcast live stream series. Please check out our YouTube channel at youtube.com/@autismwish to catch these shows live. Otherwise, stick around next week for our next episode. This is Embracing Autism.